أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. لا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين وخاتم النبيين وسيد المرسلين أبي القاسم محمد وعلى آل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المظلومين. السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين. My respected elders and brothers and sisters in Islam and Iman, tonight we've gathered here for a majlis to commemorate the events leading up to the day of Ashura and the martyrdom of the pure souls in Karbala. And we pray to Allah Ta'ala that these gatherings are a source of pleasure and comfort to the heart of the Imam of our time, and that he considers this as an indicator of the wilaya that we accept of his and the love that we have towards his family and our dedication to uphold their cause. The topic that we've been exploring has to do with the idol of self, looking at different manifestations of this idol in our lives and seeing how we can take the pure teachings of Tawheed and apply them in order to not be engaged in the worship of this idol, but rather use ourself, use our nafs in order to, for what we were, what it was created for, to get closer to Allah Ta'ala. When we look at the incidents in Karbala and we see those people who had lined up against Imam Hussein alayhi salam, one of the characteristics that unites them, as we've been talking about, is this obsession with the hawa, the obsession with their lower soul, the obsession with those things that would make them happy and pleased, and those things that sort of like tickled their fancy. One of these individuals that is well known in the history of Karbala for being somebody who was obsessed with his desires was Umar ibn Sa'd la'anatullahi alayh. Umar ibn Sa'd grew up with Imam Hussein alayhi salam. He grew up seeing Islam, and he saw his father as one of the companions, the early companions of our Prophet. He saw how there was once a dispute that took place among some of the companions about who is the best of the companions. And Sa'd, when he heard this dispute, he stood up, he said, "What are you talking about? How can this even be something which is disputable? I swear by God that even if I were to have one of the excellences of Ali ibn Abi Talib, that would be better for me than everything in this earth." He saw his father attest to that. And he himself was somebody who was renowned for his ibadah. He was somebody who was sort of like that gray-bearded man that would always be seen praying and in the mosque, and you know, a symbol for ibadah. But the people who employed him, Yazid and Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad, they knew that Umar had a soft spot, which was this obsession with the sweet delights of this world. He wanted power, he wanted land, he wanted to enjoy himself in luxury. And this is what drove him. And we see on the day of Ashura, a very revealing conversation that takes place. What happens is that one of the companions of Imam Hussein alayhi salam seeks permission from the Imam. He says, can I go and talk to Umar? I know him from a long time. Maybe I can convince him to not go ahead with this, because they knew that it was not befitting of, you know, his upbringing to act like this. So he goes to, his name was Al-Hamadani, he goes to Umar ibn Sa'd. And he says to him that, you know, this is the river from which dogs and swines are taking water. And yet you are preventing the family of Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi and the children of that family from drinking from the same water? What answer will you give on the Day of Judgment? Umar thinks about this. He ponders upon it. And then he admits, he says, I know this. I know who they are. I know what I'm doing. But there's something that's preventing me from doing the right thing, from making the right decision. And so he says in poetry, أَأَتْرُكُ مُلْكَ الرَّيِّ وَالرَّيُّ رَغْبَةٌ أَمْ أَرْجِعُ مَأْثُومٌ بِدَمِي حُسَيْنِي وَفِي قَتْلِهِ النَّارُ الَّتِي لَيْسَ دُونَهَا حِجَابٌ وَمُلْكُ رَيٍّ قُرَّةُ عَيْنِي. He admits it openly. He says that, should I leave aside this kingdom which has been promised to me, I want it so much, or should I come back home, you know, being stained with the sin of the blood of Hussein? And definitely if I were to kill him, there's the fire and there's no barrier between me and that fire if I were to do so. But the reality is that the kingdom of Ray was the name of the province that was guaranteed to him, was promised to him. وَمُلْكُ الرَّيْ قُرَّةُ عَيْنِي. It's the pleasure and the delight of my eye. Now, brothers and sisters, when we go through these stories, every year we go through them, we think about them, we ponder upon them, we need to be telling ourselves, أَعَاذَنَ Allah. May Allah protect us from this. And we need to use these occasions to remind ourselves of our duties and to see how we can prevent from falling into the same trap that these individuals did. The topic that I'd like to speak about tonight is something that can lead to this type of behavior. And it's, the topic is the obsession with entertainment. The ulama who are experts in tarbiyah and spirituality, they say that one of the means for somebody to become a slave of their desires is when they become a slave to entertainment. It's along the same path. And the reason why I'm bringing up this topic on one of these nights of Muharram is because when we talk about those greatest appeals to the nafs and to the idol of self, then definitely one of those in the society today is entertainment. And wanting to be somebody who enjoys our lives in a very material sense of the word. Now I want to share with you kind of the inspiration that I personally have for this topic. Normally we don't like to talk about ourselves, but they say that one of the best ways of, you know, creating connection with the people you're talking to is to sometimes speak about something from your personal experience. So I want to do that. There was a time many, many years ago when after I finished my university education, I was working in a company, a software company in Silicon Valley. And this was a time which was known as the dot-com era. It was a time where everyone was starting companies, everyone was really excited about the internet and what you can do with it, and there was a lot of money to be had. When somebody would graduate from university, they would be pursued by multiple recruiters who would even give away, like, you know, devices at recruiting events just for you to come and attend the recruiting event, just to give you an idea of how much demand there was and how much money there was involved. And I remember in my experience that I had worked for a number of years, and there was a time towards the end where I was sitting with the senior vice president of my company. And I asked him a question. I said that, why is it that you're doing what you're doing? This is somebody who was an industry veteran. He had been there for decades. Why is it that you're doing what you're doing? And he answered me. He says that, I just want to make enough money so I can retire and enjoy life. And I remember back then when I heard that answer from him, before that there were some questions in my mind about what was the whole thing that I'm going about doing. And when I heard that from him, I realized that this was not the reason why we've been created. There has to be something more in life, because this was somebody who is now reaching, you know, the latter years in his life. He had went past the point of youthfulness. Now he's going downward, down the slope, right? And he's telling me that he's just waiting for the time when he can enjoy life at the age of what, 50, 60, 70? Does that even make sense to anybody? That the reason why we've been created is to like slave away, and then just at the end of our lives, we enjoy. What can you enjoy at that point? There's something wrong with that. But when you look at it, brothers and sisters, it's something which is actually embedded in the society of today. This idea that the reason why we've been created is to just have a good time, to enjoy ourselves. Ask yourselves this question, that typically when people have free time, what do they spend that free time doing? When people have weekends, like for example, you know, they want to get together, what sort of things do they engage in? Typically, it's something to do with entertainment. Movies, TV, social media, video games, watching sports. Entertainment has become the whole reason for why we exist. And if you ask somebody, okay, well, what do you look forward to? They say that, well, you know, the reason, you know, I have a vacation planned, you know, maybe in summertime, then I have another one planned at, like, let's say, the Christmas break. And so I'm working so I can have this vacation time. So if you look at it, in a year, how much vacation does a typical person get? 3 weeks, 4 weeks, I don't know how it is here in the UK. So that means that 50 weeks of the year or 48 weeks of the year, the reason why you're slaving away is just for those little period of time. That doesn't make sense. What kind of design of creation would it be that the only reason why what we have to look forward to is a few pockets of weeks in our life? So there's a problem here. And compound that problem, we have another problem, which is that the type of entertainment that is available to us now is much more sophisticated than it was even, let's say, a decade ago or even before that. Every year that we go along with the advancement of technology, you see that the types of entertainment, the way that somebody can satisfy even the most, you know, sophisticated of the desires of their heart, they can choose and configure and personalize to exactly what they want to see, what they want to taste, what they want to hear. It's something which is much more than it was in the past. And you take all of these, brothers and sisters, what you find is a culture, which is a culture of seeking the pleasure of our eyes, and this culture of seeking entertainment. And as somebody who now is involved in the field of tarbiyah and working for the upbringing of our children, I find that this is one of the most dangerous trends that we're facing right now. And the thing that worries me and concerns me is that how much ignorance and how much unawareness there is about the danger of this trend of worshiping entertainment, and how often it's the case that it's not just limited to the children, but the adults are also falling into the same trap as well. So what I'd like to do tonight is to mention something about this. And I want to first take you to the lives of our imams, alayhim assalam. Our imams were guides for us in every way to show us how to live our lives. We have an incident where one of the companions who was alive at the time of our Imam Al-Askari alayhi salam, he perhaps was a companion of the previous imams. He was walking in the streets of Samarra, and he saw that there was a group of children who were playing in the street. He sees that they're playing, and he notices that everyone's playing, but there's one child who is kind of away from them, crying. And so he goes to the child and he starts thinking that, okay, maybe this child is crying because, you know, the other children are playing, they have toys, and I need to buy a toy for him. So he says that, okay, I'm going to buy a toy. So he buys a toy, goes to the child, says that, can I give you this toy? Maybe you're going to stop crying. He looks at him, he says that, I have no need of this toy. Do you think that I've been created for just playing and for sport? And so he asks him, where did you get this from? Because he was surprised that a child is speaking like this. And the child quotes an ayah from the Quran. أَفَحَسِبْتُمْ أَنَّمَا خَلَقْنَاكُمْ عَبَثًا? Do you imagine that we've created you for vain and that you will not return to us? And this man, whose name was Bahlul, he started to realize that this child was not an ordinary child. So he asks him who he is, and he says that my name is Al-Hasan. I'm the son of Muhammad, Al-Hasan, the son of Ali, the son of Muhammad. He was Imam Al-Askari alayhi salam. And then he goes on to explain the reason why he was crying. He had seen his mother light up an oven in the morning, and the way it was lit up was through a number of twigs. And so he said that I was thinking that, you know, when somebody has these small sins that come together and they pile up, then what happens is that, you know, even though it's small, it can pile up and it can become a great fire. And the fire of Jahannam is the fire which is created by our own deeds. Now, this is just one glimpse into the life of a child who is ma'asum. And you can see here what? You can see that even a child is someone who has great capacity to be able to realize truths beyond entertainment. That there is something out there other than just play and sport. In another incident, there was a man who came to Imam Jawad alayhi salam. And Imam Jawad had recently... He had recently become the Imam alayhi salam after the martyrdom of his father. And he didn't realize the stature of the Imam even though he was a child. He was the youngest of the Imams. So he decided to go to him and, you know, he's like, okay, I want to kind of get into his good books, but he's a child. So he says, okay, let me buy like a gift for him or make a gift for him. So he buys like a small toy made out of like silver apparently. So he goes to the Imam and he says, salam. The Imam responds to him, but he could tell that the Imam alayhi salam was somehow disturbed or upset with him. And when he offered the toy, the Imam alayhi salam tells him that, what is this? What do I have to do with this? Do you think that we've been created for just play and sport? Again, the same type of theme. Now don't get me wrong, brothers and sisters. We have other incidents where the Imam alayhi salam would encourage people to play, especially children. And they would say that a child who plays is a child who later on will have patience and have ability to, you know, resist and be tolerant towards others. And we have other stories and incidents reported where even the Imam alayhi salam, when they were young, that their fathers would play with them or they would be seen playing. And there's nothing wrong with that. But the point I want to say here is that the Imam alayhi salam, even in their own example, gave us this idea and this warning that look at the reason why you've been created and then see whether this culture of entertainment is something which fits with that. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. What is the perspective of Islam when it comes to entertainment? Is it something which is completely wrong, or is it something which, you know, we have to sometimes do, or how can we approach it? If we look at the traditions of the Imams, alayhi salam, the advice that we have from Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, what we see is that entertainment is actually something which is necessary for us. For example, in one tradition, Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam says that for a mu'min, there are 3 hours in his day. Now, sometimes people, they misunderstand this hadith. They think hour means like 60 minutes of the day. That's not what it means. A sa'a in Arabic can mean a period of time. And it doesn't have to be the same. It doesn't have to be 60 minutes. It means that you divide your day into 3 parts. One part is for engaging in conversation with his Lord. Another one is to build up and acquire his living, his provisions. Now, for that, that is for somebody who is, you know, obviously the breadwinner for their family. But if somebody is not, they might be playing a supportive role for that member. Or they might be in a position where they're preparing themselves in the future to be able to be the breadwinner for their family. And the third one that he mentions is halal pleasure. So what we know is that from the words of the Imams, they themselves tell us that seeking out pleasures and fulfilling them is not something which is wrong as long as they're halal. But what kind? For what purpose? What we see in another tradition from Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wa alayhi, he says that you should divide, he quotes, you know, one of the prophets and saying that you should divide your day into these categories. Number one is a time where you engage in whispered conversation with your Lord. Number two, you think of Allah's blessings to you and what He has done for you. Number three, you take account for yourself and what you've done. And the fourth one is that you seek out those halal pleasures. Now, why do we, in that tradition, he says why you should seek out the halal pleasures. He says that so that they can be a source of helping you in fulfilling the other things that you have to do. Now, these traditions, perhaps you've heard them before, but it's very important for us to realize that they have a lot of depth to them. What they tell us is that from the perspective of the Ahlul Bayt, alayhi wasalam, a believer is a believer when they have a sort of order and routine to their lives. They understand that the nature of a human being is that we have to be pursuing different things, right? We can't always be one-tracked and just doing one thing, but all of them have to be related towards one purpose, which is serving Allah Ta'ala. It's a very practical instruction. I once did kind of a search to see how many such traditions that we have. I found that there was perhaps 10 or so traditions reported from different imams where they would tell their followers that, look, divide your day into these categories. It's a very important key for living the life of a mu'min. And what we get from these traditions is that when it comes to entertainment, entertainment is something which is a necessary part of life, but it's not something which is like a free license to just go about doing it however we want, whenever we want, and seeking out whatever type of entertainment we want to get. And what I'm going to be, inshallah, addressing in just a bit is I want to look at some of the modern forms of entertainment in the form of social media and others and see how much do these line up with what the Ahlul Bayt had in mind when they told us to engage in those type of halal pleasures. But I want to make a point here. I want to emphasize that this lecture is not about trying to say that we should prevent ourselves from those things which are halal for us and sometimes necessary for us as well. So don't get me wrong. It's a very interesting story that I came across about the life of Allama Tabatabai rahmatullahi alayh. They say that when he was a child, his father had, you know, one of these traditions that he had and one of the practices that he would do in order to train his son in a correct manner is that he would take him to visit ulama. Okay, and just as a side point here, you know, that is something which can be very beneficial in the life of a child for them to have that practice. Anyhow, going on. In this incident, what we're told is that Allama Tabatabai, the great commentator of the Quran, the great scholar of, you know, the previous century, he was somebody who, when he was a child, he was taken to see Ayatollah Behjat. Ayatollah Behjat, of course, is, you know, one of the great scholars who passed away not too long ago. Ayatollah Behjat spoke with his father at that time. Perhaps he saw that this child was a child who had great aptitude. Perhaps he saw that this child had some purity in him. But what he told him was very interesting. He told him that when you're raising this child, do so in a balanced way. Don't be somebody as a father who forces him to do everything. Meaning, of course, you know, parents have responsibility when it comes to the wajibat, from teaching those things which need to be taught. But when it comes to the extra things, so for example, he said that if he memorizes the Quran, don't force him to memorize Nahjul Balagha. If he wants to do it himself, that's fine. Then he tells him that make sure that you allow him to have times of play and entertainment. Take him different places. Let him see things. For a child in particular, this is extremely important. But again, whether it be a child or whether it be an adult, the question is what kind of entertainment and how should we go about doing so? So what I want to do is to lay out some of the principles that we have when it comes to entertainment. Number one is that entertainment should be something which is halal. That was something that was emphasized in the traditions of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam. The reality is, brothers and sisters, when you go to the types of modern entertainment that we have, whether it be Netflix or YouTube or Snapchat or whatever, if we're honest with ourselves, there's a lot of it which is either in the kind of gray area or it's something which is outright haram. If you go and study the fatawa of our maraji and you say that what is it exactly that's allowed for us when it comes to what we can see, what we can't see, they don't just say that, oh, as long as you're not affected by it, then it's okay, you can go ahead and watch that. That's kind of typically some of the attitude that people have towards entertainment media. They don't say that. They don't just say even that, okay, as long as that, you know, it's not something which, you know, is going to provoke you to sin, is go ahead, you can go ahead and watch it. No. They give us very clear guidelines about what you can see, what you can't see. What type of dress is allowed, what type of not. They even go as far as to say that if it's something which portrays negative ethical behavior, not outright haram, but it's somehow taking you in a negative, it's eating away at your values and your morals, then that's something which you should avoid watching as well. And if you look at it and see what kind of themes are promoted in the types of shows that are out there, oftentimes you see that it's exactly the opposite of what Islam teaches. So that's number one, is that it should be halal. Number two is that the type of entertainment that we pursue should not be something that makes us neglectful about our fundamental responsibilities. I mean, it's not something where because we engage in that, we forget about what's more important. A simple example, you know, typical Western life for a weekend night is that we get together late at night, we sit out around, you know, eat together, chat. We're up until late at night. Maybe watch a movie or something like that. Finally, we, you know, climb into bed at like 2 a.m., 3 a.m. in the morning. Well, what's going to happen? What was the result of that entertainment? The result of that entertainment is that our Fajr prayer becomes qada. Is that the type of entertainment which is encouraged within Islam? Obviously not. That's one example, but brothers and sisters, this is something we need to think about deeply. We have more responsibilities other than our ibadah, although that is, you know, a core, and that's something which is extremely important. We have responsibilities towards our family. We have responsibilities towards our community, responsibilities towards our society. If you combine all the free time that people might have that they use in mindless entertainment, and you were to say that, okay, let's use that free time, or at least some of it, maybe half of it, okay, let's use it for actually advancing the cause of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. Wouldn't it be something where we would stop seeing this problem that we have where in our communities where you have a small number of people who are taking up that responsibility, but a large number of people who just aren't involved at all? So there are these extremely important responsibilities. And this is something that I want to, inshallah, touch on in the future nights about what are our responsibilities when it comes to the mission of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. And what is our excuse going to be to our Imam alayhi salam that I'm sorry, I was so busy with Netflix and that binge watching that I was unable to do anything for your cause? I don't think that's going to be a valid answer. So that's number two, is that it shouldn't be something that makes us neglectful of our responsibility. Number three is that the time that we spend on this entertainment needs to be contained. You see how the Imams told us that you have these different things that you have to engage in. And they give us the reason for why you engage in this entertainment, meaning that it should be something which is enough for you to gain, kind of to be refreshed, to gain energy so you can go about doing the rest of the things that you do. But typically, the way it works is that, you know, the way it's structured is that it's not something that is limited in the time that we have towards it. You know how it goes? When you get online, you start chatting, you go to one thing, to the other thing, browsing here, checking that message, talking to this person, that person. It's something which has, the very nature of it, when it comes to modern entertainment media, is that it comes and sucks up all the free time that you have. It sort of floods it up. So this is number three. Number four is that it shouldn't become something which is a habit in and of itself. And this is also very important as well. That when we look at this type of media, it's something which, you know, we get used to the idea of having it. What happens when you take away somebody's phone? Typically, right? It's as if their whole life has fallen apart. They don't know how to function. They don't know how to think. They don't know what to do with their time. One of the most useful things that we can do as a way of measuring how much of an idol this has become for us is to, especially when we're home with our family, put away our phones, put away the devices, and go back to the way it used to be when we were at home, we spent time with the people around us. And then see, you know, how much have we become attached and even addicted to this? One of the major forms of addiction in entertainment media is video games. And one of the most concerning trends that we have in the community, our community, the Muslim community, the Shia community, is young people typically, but even people in their 20s or 30s, who become obsessed with video games. Inshallah, I'll talk about that perhaps on another night, but it's an area that we really need to think about, that is this the purpose of a mu'min to become, you know, the top player in, I don't know, whatever game is the latest fashion right now? So brothers and sisters, these are some principles that we have. Now, the last one is an extremely important point, which goes back to like this point that I have about the purpose shouldn't be entertainment. And this is, after we're talking about these principles, number one was be halal. Number two, it shouldn't make us neglectful of our responsibility. Number three is that we should be time managed. Number four, it shouldn't become a habit. Now, number five is that it shouldn't become the reason why we live. The reason why we live is something much different than that. This is very key. If we look at the Quran, Allah Ta'ala has given us a number of verses that tell us the reason why we've been created. We've quoted a few of those in previous nights. But this one is in a very useful perspective about how Allah wanted to live our lives. In Surah Al-Inshiqaq, verse number 6, Allah Ta'ala says, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم يا أيها الإنسان. O human being, that's you, that's me. إِنَّكَ كَادِحٌ إِلَىٰ رَبِّكَ كَدْحًا فَمُلَاقِيهِ. You indeed have been created in a state of kadh. You're engaged in kadh. Kadh means laborious work in order to reach your goal. And what is the purpose of all that? فَمُلَاقِيهِ. So that you can meet your Lord. Allah Ta'ala, who's the one who created us, Allah Ta'ala, who is the one who provides for us, is telling us that what he wants from us, what kind of life he wants us to live. And he's telling us that I have created you that so you can be somebody who labors in your life. Now, brothers and sisters, the culture that we have here is one of that, well, I'd rather not. If I can, I'd rather be somebody who just sits back, gets on my phone, pulls up Netflix or whatever it may be, and just enjoys myself. Work, I'll do it. Okay, if I have to, yeah, okay. But that's not really something. I'd rather kind of, you know, escape from it, go on my vacations and do my retirement. But the perspective of the Quran and the perspective of Islam is that work isn't supposed to be like that. We're actually created to be human beings. Like, we're created, our nature is such that we're supposed to be active. We're supposed to be engaged in, like, moving forward and doing things. Somebody who gets used to a life of just luxury and entertainment is moving far away from the reason why they were even created. You must have heard this story before. It's a very beautiful story. When Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, he was returning back from the expedition of Tabuk, and he sees that there is an elderly gentleman who is waiting to greet him. His name was Sa'd al-Ansari. And that man is very happy to see Rasulullah. You know, he was the delight of his eyes, the beloved of his heart. And he goes forward to greet our Prophet. And he extends his hand to touch the hands of Rasulullah. And when the Prophet feels his hands, he feels that they're very worn and they're hard. Somebody who's used his hands and works with them. So he asks him, he says, I've noticed that your hands are hard and they've been used. Tell me, what is it? Why? And so the man tells him that I spent my life working with them. I've cut rope. I've used it to build things. I made things with it. And this is the result that you're seeing right here. And when Rasulullah heard this, and he heard that the man did this in order to provide for his family, He kisses his hands and he tells him these are hands which will be protected from the fire of hell. Now, what does this tell us, brothers and sisters? It tells us that this idea that, okay, what I'd actually rather be doing is just be in a state of being entertained, just sitting back and being blasted with these messages and images and videos and whatnot, right? That is not the right culture. That's a wrong perception. We have a beautiful hadith from our sixth imam. He speaks about Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam. He says that Imam alayhi salam, when he would be busy fighting the enemy, but when he wouldn't be fighting, he would be with the people, he would be teaching them, he would be resolving their disputes. And when he wouldn't be teaching the people and he wouldn't be resolving their disputes, then he would be working in his garden, he would be planting trees, working with his hands. And the whole time, the Imam alayhi salam says, the whole time he would be in the remembrance of Allah. But then sisters, there's a cultural paradigm shift that we need to have if we want to see things from the perspective of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam. If I can ask you to recite salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Now, when we look at some of the manifestations of modern entertainment media, for example, you look at social media. What has social media done for us and what does it do for us? It's something which wasn't like this some years back, but now you find that even children are, you know, busy, you know, sometimes they even come to the center and they spend the time chatting with others, right? We're always being in touch with other people. And some people say that, okay, well, what's the problem? I can talk to my family this way. I can, you know, chat with my relatives who are on this other side of the world. Now, brothers and sisters, when we criticize, you know, entertainment media, we're not saying that it's completely bad and there's no good uses for it. But just because there's some goodness to it doesn't mean that everything about it is good. And a lot of times it's a matter of awareness and realization. There was a student in school, in the school that we're involved with, where she was being honest. She says that our family routine, it's her, you know, her sister and her mother. Our family routine on a nightly basis is that when we get home, I do my homework, and we start eating dinner, and my mom is on her phone, my sister's on her phone, and I'm on my phone. And that's how we spend the rest of the evening. And that's my life. That's my family life. Right? Another example, another student. I have trouble sleeping at night. In the middle of the night, I wake up and I want to check what's the latest, what are the latest messages. Right? These are just small examples of how this type of media, it's something which is invasive. It's changing the way that we even relate to each other. There was a very interesting study that just was released about the effect of this type of media. They say that in the past, it would be the case, that they did a survey 6 years ago among youth about whether you would rather talk to somebody in person or rather you'd rather chat with them using your device. And it's very interesting. They just did this survey in 2018. They did it 6 years ago. 6 years ago, around 40% of the youth that they surveyed said that I'd rather talk online than I would in person. Meaning they recognize that, okay, we need to speak in person. I mean, that's what communication is about. But now they say that more than 50% would rather chat online than speak in person. Now, this type of thing, you know, it's not just a random statistic. It's something that we can see when you interact with the communities, you interact with people, you see that this is the way things are heading. That real life face-to-face experiences, relationships are breaking down. You have families where they live together. They're in the same room together. From the outside, all they have is a little, you know, rectangular box in their hands. But in reality, what's happened is that these boxes have created silos around the people who are in the room. Why? Because there's no control. There's no awareness that this is something which is taking you in this path towards being an entertainment monster. Somebody who just wants to be engaged in the fulfillment of the desires of your senses at all times. If we look at the music industry. Okay. Music industry, some people want to get into the discussion about what's halal and what's haram. You know, tell me, okay, is this haram music, halal music? We can have that discussion. But if you just step back and look at the industry itself, why is it that if you want to look, find something which is rotten, something which is immoral, right? Something which, if you want to see like the worst of the values of humanity, why is it that you find it within the music industry? There has to be a reason why there's a correlation between the two. These songs that come out and they get to the tops of the charts, sometimes people think that, okay, well, it's just a singer who had a good voice, who's putting out a good tune and singing these lyrics. But if you go and study, you know, the how the music industry actually works, you see that that's a very naive way of looking at it. The people who make the songs are actually a very small group of people. And they have a certain agenda that they want to push on the society. The people who make the tunes have studied how they can make these words be addictive for the children and for the people who are listening to them, for everyone, for human beings. They study what are the weak points where they can get into the minds of those listeners. And the messages that they convey are very similar as well too. They did a study of all the top songs over a year. And you know, sometimes you might be wondering, okay, why are we talking about this? Is it necessary? Brothers and sisters, this is the core. This is the reason why we find that people are going away. They did a study of all, just recently, of all the songs within a year. What were the themes? And they found that more than 90% of the themes of the most popular songs, all of them had to do with inappropriate relationships. Now imagine that these songs are coming in and the person's listening to them and they don't just listen once, they listen again and again. And the more you listen, the more you get addicted to it. Now these words have an impact on you. The famous song from the Disney animation Frozen. Many of you, I'm sure, have heard of this. Maybe some of you have seen it. Maybe your children have seen it. What does the song say? It says, let it go, let it go. Right? I don't know, I haven't memorized the lyrics, but the gist of it is that I just want to be free, let it go. Right? I don't want any type of barrier. I don't want any type anybody telling me what to do. Right? I want to be somebody who's free. Now imagine that, you know, there's somebody who's listening to that again and again, they grow up with it. And then you tell them that, oh, by the way, you've been created to be a slave to God, right? You have obligations that you have to fulfill. But they've been growing up with this idea that I'm free, right? It's a mismatch. What's going to happen? If you look at Hollywood, right? Hollywood industry has a deep tie with the instruments of zulm in the world today. You know, when they have major wars that they want people to accept, major lies of, let's say, weapons of mass destruction that they want people to sort of swallow. What do? Right? They get on a conference call, and this has been documented with, you know, the top directors of Hollywood, and they say that, okay, you know, this is the message we want you to push. The scripts of major movies that are made in Hollywood, there's a special department in the government where there's, you know, interaction between the two. Right? Now, as somebody who is a Shia of Imam Ali alayhi salam, we have to ask ourselves that Imam alayhi salam is one who stood for justice. When I become a tool to be pushed all the messages of the tools of oppression, then, you know, what kind of value do I have? Right? Do I want to be somebody who just takes these in and, oh, because it's pleasing, because of, oh, the action here and, you know, really good cinematography here and, you know, the actors. I have to be a little bit resistant to this and say that what are these things doing to, what do they want from me? I should have a little bit of ghira and say that I am concerned about my faith. I'm concerned about my identity. I don't want to be compromised by the type of media and entertainment that I'm being asked to go for. Brothers and sisters, if we even look at the nature of the dunya, you can ask yourself this question. That is it even really possible for us to be in a state where we're totally like just in comfort completely? Right? If you look at it, whatever you do in life, there's always going to be something which is wrong. Right? For example, let's say, okay, you get the tastiest food and you eat the most of it that you can. Well, afterwards, you're going to face problems. Right? Let's say that you go to a beautiful location, you know, let's say a natural sort of place, right? And you're there and you're thinking, okay, this is going to be the greatest thing. I don't know. And it rains or there's mosquitoes, right? Or Like the nature of the world. You set yourself up for being able to enjoy yourself completely in your retirement. And what happens is that you end up getting some type of sickness or some type of injury or you have a pain. Right? The nature of the dunya isn't such that it was created for us to be able to just have this state of entertainment and relaxation. And this is something that we find in the words of our Imam, Imam Sajjad alayhi salam. He says that don't seek out that thing which was not been created. And so the companions, they asked him, he says that, well, what was it that's not created? He says that don't go for seeking out comfort in the dunya. Especially for mu'mineen. And this is what I want to ask you for you to think about, that as a mu'min, do I have the right to be somebody who just sets myself up to enjoy myself and just kind of be in a state of, you know, I am now like, okay, I'm done with all my work and now I'm just going to be like, let's just kick back and just watch a movie and that's the only goal that I have. I'm not saying that, you know, it's haram. I'm saying that this becomes the goal for why I exist. And at that point, I'm going to be completely happy. How can we be completely happy and just feeling that thing of I'm completely entertained when we are told that we have to be having some feeling for the others as well too? There's a brother who recently came to me, said that I have this problem that I know that I have to take my children and I need to play with them. I need to take them out for recreation. It's my responsibility as the father. But when I look and see the type of oppression that's being done to my brothers and sisters around the world, when I see what's happening in Palestine and Yemen and other, I can't be happy. So I told him, I said, brother, this type of sentiment you have is exactly the sentiment of a mu'min. But a mu'min has been given the ability to have multiple emotions at the same time. Yes, on the outer, we can be enjoying ourselves, as long as we're observing those guidelines of it being halal and not being the goal and all that. Because we know that we're worshiping Allah in doing so. He wanted us to do that. But at the same time, you can be looking in your heart and you can be saying that I have another dimension of me that's crying right now. Because there's this injustice taking place and these are my brothers and these are my sisters. Mu'mineen are supposed to be like one body. Where, you know how it works, that one part of our body, even if let's say it's a finger that's paining us, the rest of our body is on fire. Until that pain subsides, the rest of the body is not going to be in peace as well as either. One of the issues that should be burning us right now is the issue of what's happening in Bahrain. Alhamdulillah, we have this brave young man in this city who is sacrificing so much. He has a family, right? But he's out there, you know, day and night in the cold, demonstrating, making a stand for justice, sacrificing. I was reading about one of the people who was a dissident. He had to escape from Bahrain. He was talking about the type of torture that's done to people in the prisons. He says that, I mean, something, I can't even talk about it. But it's not just a matter of like, okay, they sort of like threaten you. No, they go to like levels where you say, that are these even human beings, right? They're beasts. And the type of oppression that they do, the type of injustice that's occurred there, all in the name of, you know, that these are countries which are supposed to be having human rights and upholding them. And you find those governments that supposedly support human rights are the biggest supporters of these governments as well too. Tomorrow night, inshallah, we're going to be going and joining this brother and giving him support and, you know, like spiritual support by remembering Imam Hussein alayhi salam with him. Inshallah, we can all be there. And this is one of the duties that we have of mu'mineen, to like show that we care and we have concern for these type of matters as well. So this culture of entertainment is something, again, where it becomes the be-all and end-all of why we exist. But just to move to the end of my speech, when we look at what the Ahlul Bayt alayhissalam wanted of us, they wanted something else. And there's a beautiful line in the dua of Makarum al-Akhlaq of Imam Sajjad alayhissalam. He says that, O Allah, employ me and make me busy in performing that good which you will ask me about tomorrow. And this is something, it's a very important, you know, motto that we can have, that I have a responsibility. What I want to be busy doing is pursuing that responsibility. Last story I'll mention is from the times of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. It's a very interesting story. He says that the tradition goes like this. There was once a companion who goes to the Imam alayhi salam. He says that I was in a gathering where somebody was telling stories. At that time, the Hollywood of that time was telling stories. So you can kind of translate it to like the modern forms of entertainment. Maybe people are around, you know, they get to a session where they're going to have like online gaming or they're going to be watching a movie or something. Okay. So he says that I was in a session with somebody was telling a story and I wanted to check something with you because the storyteller told us that whoever is a participant in this gathering, then that person will never face any misfortune in their lives. I wanted to see, what is your perspective on that? Can it be the case that that type of gathering is something like that? The Imam al-Islam says that, hayhat, hayhat. Meaning that how far that person is away from the truth. The Imam al-Islam wants to correct his perspective. He says that, but rather, if there is a gathering in which Muhammad and the family of Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa sallam is mentioned, that is a gathering where the angels come together and they join them in that gathering. And after the gathering disperses, these angels go to the sick ones and the sick members of their families and they go and pray for them, they help them. They go and take care of the needs that these mu'mineen have. That is truly the gathering in which there is no misfortune to come after it. So when it comes to brothers and sisters, the way we organize our lives, what we aim for, again, the point isn't to say that it's haram. It's something which is necessary. We need to have our halal entertainment, but that's not the reason why we existed. We need to be people who understand that we have a mission. We have a reason. We have reasons to be happy for the sake of Allah, but we also have reasons to be unhappy as well. One of them is the oppression. One of them is the ghibah of the imam of our time. And I'll end my lecture here by just making a small tawassul to the imam alayhi salam and say that, oh imam, that we ask and beg your forgiveness for being people who are creatures of entertainment and all we sometimes aim for is fulfilling the lust of our eyes. Oh imam, beg our pardon if we fill our hearts with the joy of this superficial entertainment and we are in a state of neglectfulness about your ghiba and that the reason for the continuation of the ghiba is none other than us. Azizun alayya an ara al-khalqa wa la tura. O Imam, how difficult it is for me that I see the creation and I do not see you. And how difficult it is for me to imagine the type of trials and afflictions that you face. And I can't even express to you or communicate with you. Sallallahu ala Muhammad wa alayhi al-tahirin.